Blog Talk Radio.
Get up again and smile. Get up again and smile.
Good morning and welcome to Our Black News. I'm Don Allen. Good morning, Ms. White, on Facebook Live. I'm joined today by my special guest, Mr. Anthony Scott, historian, publisher, archiver, social service guru for many years. Anthony, welcome. Welcome to the show this morning.
Good morning, Don. Thanks for having me on your show. We got a lot to talk about,
yeah.
So I guess we should get right to it.
Yeah. We'd like to take a moment to start out the show and say our condolences to Chadwick Boseman. Black Panther, died of 43, colon cancer, diagnosed 4 years ago. And is really young. He has a great body of work. And I appreciate, I watched the movie. I didn't have time to look it up. I'll look it up before the end of the show, Anthony. It was a... he was a homicide detective, and these guys went in and stole a bunch of money, and it was really action-packed. You know, I thought he was like the Black Panther on that show. But, yeah, he's a great actor. He has a nice body of work, and, again, our condolences to his family.
Yeah, tremendous, tremendous. You know, I really loved him in the James Brown movie. I mean, yeah. I think I really liked how he just immersed himself in Brown, learned the dancing. I saw a little thing on TV the other day how he really just studied Brown and really wanted to make sure he did it right. So rest in peace, brother.
Yes. Now, let's move on. I was shocked. Again, you're listening to Our Black News, broadcasted live via Facebook Live and also on Blog Talk Radio. If you're listening on Blog Talk Radio, thank you very much for listening. And we're going to be here for the next hour talking, covering a lot of things. And the state of the Twin Cities is what the conversation is going to be wrapped around today. And we're not talking about D.C. We're not talking about Trump. We're talking about Minneapolis, St. Paul, the state of Minnesota, because we have opened up a can of worms. In some cases, the chickens have come home to roost. And within the Black community, there is chaos. I mean, there's some good things, there's some bad things, and there's some really terrible things going on. And we saw that played out all this week. But I want to get to, you know, I thought, Anthony, I was looking at the newspaper, the Star and Tribune. I broke down and I got a subscription because I was sick of going to the website and not being able to read the whole story, okay? I said I would never do that. I didn't do it for like 11 years. And then all of a sudden, okay, I did it. I paid him. And, you know, I try to post a lot of comments on different stories on Star and Tribune, and they're not having it. Okay, they're going like, nope. I can't tell you what my handle is, but they just have not published a lot of the comments that I had a story.
Yeah.
And I thought they were pulling my leg. They published this: police investigate a quadruple shooting in North Minneapolis. This was published.
I saw that.
Yeah.
That quadruple shooting.
Quadruple. That's four, right? Four? Four is quadruple. Okay. If you're having quadruple shootings in any part of your city, we need to check in with the city councilman, the mayor, and the police chief to see what the hell is going on. And it was, let me just see here. It's up around the 2400 block of Irving. You had multiple shootings. People taken to the hospital. No, it didn't say anybody died. It said it was a couple of them were non-life threatening. And that was kind of interesting. And if we back up and we look, this has not stopped. I mean, even after the George Floyd incident, which I'll call incident right now, and we're going to get to that a little bit later in the show, there's been an uptick in homicides, especially killing of women. There was a young lady shot this week. I think a couple of them, not mistaken.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Where are we headed, Anthony?
Yeah.
Where are we headed with this?
I think, you know, it's so sad. And then this last one, you know, this quadruple shooting, was anyone caught? I mean, I don't see if they have any suspects or they catch anybody or they have these shot spotters.
No,
they have these shot spotters that are supposed to ring out to them as soon as bullets ring out that they can be there. And
I guess I don't know that much about the shot spot technology, but I know if you shoot and get in your car and drive 30, 40 miles an hour down the street, it's kind of hard to figure out who did this. You know, and I know they have eyes in the sky and those type of things, but some of this stuff is so random and unpredictable, it's hard to stop it. It's hard to make a niche in this crime in North Minneapolis and across the city, St. Paul. I shouldn't pick on North Minneapolis, but North Minneapolis has been my petri dish, and of course poverty has petri dish for the last 20 years as far as funding. And so if you want to get money for your nonprofit, say you're working in North Minneapolis, because the likelihood of there being a disparity that your agency is working on, it happens there. But that's just how it's been for a very long time. And reflecting on Chadwick's death, you know, at 43 years old, he did a lot of stuff. And it made me think about mortality last night and what I have done, what I haven't done, what I want to do, and what do you want people to say when you leave here, which is very important. And then I look at areas where, you know, this is our Black news. Then I look at areas that in our community that for the last 40 years have not gained any traction. And if they do gain traction, the people that live there have to move out of the area. And so with that said, we have a lot of craziness going on, and I'm a little bit taken back by Mayor Jacob Frey, the city council person Cunningham, the city council person Ellison, the city council person Bender, and a couple of other ones that I haven't gotten there yet with, because of their lack of oversight and leadership. There's a flip side. I mean, have you heard of a press release with the Urban League or anybody, NAACP, since this stuff has been going on?
No, I haven't heard from any of them. And, you know, but back to this, you know, this quadruple shooting.
Yeah.
I mean, the people that got shot, don't they know who shot them? I mean, do they have any idea who shot them? Can they say so-and-so shot me? This is what they... But you never really see anyone caught. So it continues to have a thing of fear.
Yeah.
It just keeps you in fear. All these people are running around. You want to go outside? Or I was on the north side just the other day. I went to Wendy's House of Soul.
Ooh.
Tremendous chicken wings. Oh, but off the hook.
Mm-hmm.
But the north side, all Broadway, I mean, everything's boarded up. Everything just looks like it's almost abandoned all the way up, which was a great... commercial strip for years and years. Yeah. Everything's boarded up. And there just doesn't seem to be any control, like we're saying, down from the mayor, from the city council, from the north side politicians. I saw even the name Don Samuels popped up the other day that he's going to be doing something. He's trying to make a comeback. But we've already seen the north side empowerment zone. They've been there for years. What have they done?
Yeah, and Mr. Scott is talking about is the North Side Achievement Zone and then the Empowerment Zone. The Empowerment Zone, as what you're talking about, that went for a long time. A lot of people got a lot of money, but it was not sustainable because the folks, this is just my opinion and observation of the Empowerment Zone. The people that received money, yes, I'm doing comedy, Senator Coran. The people that received the money did not understand the long term. You know, like when some of us get money, we go out and buy a Cadillac. Oops. And when some of us get money, we put it in the bank. We look for investments. We invest in things that we can turn liquid if we need them to in a clutch moment. And so with that said, that empowerment zone money was not, it fixed up a few front of the stores in North Minneapolis, but now we're back, what, 10 years later, to pre-empowerment zone looks in North Minneapolis. That's how it was looking before the empowerment zone money came in. Now, it came in, it got distributed, and we're making a point here. Our listeners, our call in number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. If you want to call in and comment, challenge us, got a suggestion, a topic, yeah, give me a call. But anyway, getting back to that, it's a cycle. It's a very disturbing cycle in procedures. You have pre late 1990s, early 2000s, getting into the empowerment zone. Okay, this is North Minneapolis. Black people live there. We need to do this and do that. Okay, empowerment zone. We'll get some federal money. We'll put it in here. Promise neighborhoods. We'll get that money, federal money, and put it in here, distribute it in these St. Paul, Minneapolis, and wherever else, neighborhoods, promise neighborhoods. And we'll do what we can with the empowerment zone up to a certain point. But again, what I saw a money grab, and I did, and I saw people get really sophisticated versus working hard. I saw people turn into celebrities. In their mind, I wasn't thinking that. I mean, I was watching. It was funny because I had my bag of popcorn. But it did not do what it needed to do. It was like, you know, back in the gold rush days, if you found a mine or a vein, I should say a vein of gold, you just like, you didn't tell nobody. You know, you just went out there, mined it, brought it back, sold it, mined it. And then you had people to sneak up on you, beat you, and take your gold. And, you know, all this went on in North Minneapolis through a long period of time. And those people that were funded for a lot of this stuff, don't get me wrong, Anthony, there was a lot of good done out of that money. There was a lot of good done. But the good could not outweigh the not so great. And the sustainability, there weren't people that wanted to look at what was going to happen in 2020, back in the early 2000s. There weren't people. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, who's in charge of this? Yeah, maybe I'm a little bit confused on the north side politics. I mean, the empowerment zone, and then what about the building where KMOJ is? Is that the headquarters of the empowerment zone, or is that another North Side Achievement Center? It sounds like there's two different things going on.
Yeah, well, there's a story behind that building. That building on the corner of Penn and Broadway was formerly DeLisi. And there was a deal worked out where it ended up in the hands of KMOJ's board of directors. And again, they found a vein of gold because the city said, we're to give you this building, we're to give you this money, you need to develop it. It was, from what I read early on, it was a chance for this black media outlet and nonprofit training grounds for people in media and radio, et cetera, to show ownership to the community. What they did is they hired someone in and basically gave them the money. And the guy that they hired in, I really like him. I think he's really cool. I don't have to say his name. If you don't know who it is, then, you know, direct mail me or inbox me and I'll tell you. But he's a cool cat. I've talked to him before, okay? And so what happened is instead of ownership, they're paying rent. And then the apartment zone, or the Northside Achievement Zone, I should say, I guess is renting the bottom half of that building. I think that's just one of their hubs.
Okay, because I know I have stopped over there, and I know KMOJ kind of has the upper part of that building, and downstairs is the offices. Like, so that's the empowerment zone? Is that the achievement center?
No, that was just the Northside Achievement Zone right there. See, what was supposed to happen originally, or what was talked about, and I can say this as an authority, that there would be businesses and offices on that first floor, you know, like little small micro businesses that could have offices there, but when they did not find the necessary people with the resources to pay that $9 to $15 a square foot, it was better to stick an agency, a nonprofit agency in there who could sustain that half of the building. And so, yeah, that's terrible. You know, I've been watching all the things that have kind of been going on in the news and then with our youth here in the Twin Cities, ages like 15 to 25. And I'm concerned. And after reading the newspaper this morning, some of the headlines are some school districts are pushing back the start date. Some districts they're going to postpone the start of school till this day over here, blah, blah, blah. And I'm looking at that. I'm going like, okay, someone's seeing what I see, okay? In less than two weeks, September 8th, especially the Twin Cities, the schools are going to open back up. They're going to have connections to all these kids that have been protesting, a lot of them, that have been angry, that have not have not been engaged on an academic level with rigor since March. We're walking into what I would like to call a powder keg. I'm not trying to spread fear, okay? I'm not trying to demonize anybody. So don't run off and say, oh, you're saying this and you're saying that, blah, 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 because I'll just ignore you. But the thing is, these kids, especially in the inner city, have identified the enemy. They know yellow, red, black, and white. They know what the enemy sounds like. They know what the enemy says. They even know, in some cases, what the enemy looks like in their mind. So it is going to be a difficult uphill engagement battle or battle of engagement to make sure that educational hubs around the state of Minnesota deal with these youth coming in. Anthony, the other day, for full disclosure, I'm an English teacher, high school English teacher, but I ran into a couple of students that went to another school, didn't go to my school, and they knew me because I was a substitute first. And said, hey, they worked at the dollar store in the Midway area. Hey, Mr. Allen, how you doing, blah, blah. Start mixing it up. And one of the girls says, yeah, I'm going to school, and I'm not taking anything this year from anybody. I said, they're gonna make sure I learn, and very firm and assertive. It's like, boom, it was a spiritual awakening. Because I remember her when she was in the class. Even though she did great work, she wasn't really outspoken like this. And she's at a point in her academic career where she understands that school does not stop when you graduate as a senior from high school. You need to keep going. And it was so nice to see that fire in her eyes. I mean, it was like, yes, we need to duplicate this, can it, or bottle it, and distribute it across everywhere. And so I guess my point is that you can read all the white fragility books you want to. If you're not ready for these kids, they're going to know it day one. Your thoughts, sir?
I don't know what's going to happen with schools. I mean, we're in such disarray across the board, and I'm hoping that they can get some semblance of balance with schools, because that's a real base for our kids. And as you have pointed out, kids these days are really, they're trying to do grown folks stuff, is what the old folks used to say. And they're trying to, so they're hard. I mean, I don't know how you can be a teacher these days. I think you've got a really tough job to try to rein these kids in, because you're not getting a lot of parental support. You're not getting a lot of community type of support for these schools. You're not getting the police support. Nobody's working together in concert to realize, hey, we've got to rein these kids in. We've got to just give them a direction and give them hope and give them something that they want to come to school for.
Yeah.
Whatever it is. It doesn't have to be sports. It doesn't have to be nothing at all. You know, one of my brothers was a teacher for years.
Mm-hmm.
He taught FIAD at Minneapolis Central and high schools and over at North.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things he did is he started a jump roping, just a jump roping type of a competition.
Mm-hmm.
And there were just a lot of kids that liked to jump rope.
Mm-hmm.
And he made it into a big thing where there was a whole group of people and they would compete against the city. But that's just an example of just one something that you can begin to add for these kids to give them some interest. They're not going to be basketball players. Nobody's going to go to the NBA. Nobody's going to the NFL. That's not going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, I don't even care how good you are. The chances are minuscule for that to happen.
Yes, exactly.
So I think the schools have to really come up with different ideas with technology now. There's a lot of options, and hopefully the schools can do it. But if they go to this online learning that they're talking about, don't the kids have to have their own mechanism? Don't they have to have their own computers? Don't they have to have their own to participate online?
Yeah.
So how would that work?
Yeah, well, I know that any kid in any public or private school in the state of Minnesota is supplied with at least an iPad, okay, period. And so I think the electronics are in the home sufficiently from what I observe just from my purview. But, you know, there's other things that are needed. Wi-Fi, of course. Wonder if you have five kids from the same family and they're all in school.
Yeah.
And they're in the same house and they decide to do homework, one or three or four of them, or maybe all five of them. And that Wi-Fi signal is the basic signal from Comcast or Xfinity, and it doesn't have the gigabytes or the MPSs or whatever it's called to really pump the internet to get the kids to upload and stuff. I mean, there's a lot of variables and derivatives in this distance learning, and I don't think it's bad, but I think that we're being a little reactive than proactive. And to get out there in front of it would mean to teach the kids technology, you know, and not a lot of that is happening. You're listening to Our Black News. I'm Don Allen. This is Anthony Scott. We're broadcasting on Facebook Live and Zoom. If you want to link to Zoom, good luck with that because it's only for two people. Our calling number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. If you have a question, comment, or concern, we gladly take your call. Good morning for those of you that are watching on Facebook Live. I appreciate it. I try to record these on Zoom and then keep a file of all these things. So, because when you, a lot of guys go on Facebook Live, Anthony, and it's really strange. They put their videos up there. And then after your feed goes after a little while, you don't really have a lot of access. I guess you go to your videos or whatever. But I like to take this to, like, save it and then upload it to where I can have a long-term archive. We have a message from Ms. Davis. Ms. Davis, would you like to call in? 347-426-3904. Her question is, why not let the young adults help by asking them what they want to do? These are very intelligent and aware young people with great ideas about where they want to go in life. Give them a chance. That was Ms. Angela Williams-Davis' question. Again, her number is 347-426-3904, and I'll type that in the chat for Facebook Live. I think Ms. Davis presents a good challenge. The other night, let's go back to, was it Wednesday? When this young man put that either 9mm or 45 in his mouth and blew the back of his head out, that was tough to watch the first time. And when you see this person who earlier that day at 2 o'clock had shot someone point blank in the face and killed him, and then ran from the police. We found out further that he slept at the Salvation Army in downtown Minneapolis. He's been there for 2.5 years. He did not have a job at the time. And he had a gun in that order. And so I guess what I'm trying to ask is that, how does that happen, number one, and how did it get to the point for him that a lot of people said that he killed himself because he'd rather die than get arrested by the MPD. They framed it in a way to make it the police look worse than they already look. And I watched that whole thing developed from several different live feeds from several different angles. So I have like three or four of my own iPads. I have a couple computers. So what I did was I found live feeds of what was going on, and I turned them on, and I just sat back here, and I looked. And I watched in the very beginning this live feed where they had him laying in, they're trying to give him CPR, resuscitate him. He was gone the minute he pulled the trigger. And people started to gather. I saw kids running from the IDS Center, from down Nicollet Mall, cars pulling over. Then I heard this rumor that police shot him.
Yeah.
And there was one little girl who had, well, the city had a camera because they were following this guy downtown. They were going to catch him. They were following him. They had a camera that clearly showed him standing in front of a door, going in the backpack, putting the weapon in his mouth, and firing and falling back or falling down forward. And they waited too long to put that out. It was gory. I understand. It was terrible. But a few people in that crowd in downtown Minneapolis the other night, the agent provocateurs in the black community hinted that he could have possibly been shot by police. This started a bombardment of chaos. I watched another feed. People in Target. They had folks running in Target, grabbing stuff, running out. The police sat back on the sidelines. They didn't do anything. This was volatile. Okay? And when you look at that kind of stuff, excuse me, and you see people that look like you doing this, you're asking why. You're figuring out as a black person, how do I support them? I couldn't find a way to support it. I put all the logic I had in a cup and said, no. Why? Go ahead, Em.
Well, what really happened that night? I mean, I thought someone said that he had shot someone else first. Did he have killed a girl or killed a girlfriend or something and then shot himself? I don't know exactly.
Well,
the
series of events are still sketchy. But from what I was watching and what I've read and what I saw on other people's sites, at sometime around 2 o'clock earlier that day, he shot someone point blank in the face in a parking ramp, killed him. So he was in runner mode downtown. And, you know, if you've ever worked in downtown Minneapolis, you can walk around the whole thing in 20 minutes. You know, start at the Skyway back at the government center, walk all the way down to the Target Center, get out, walk to the warehouse district, and then come back up Washington Avenue, hit 2nd and Washington, and be back in the Skyways, back wherever you need to go. And so I guess he was running all over downtown Minneapolis at the time, and people were a little concerned, especially the police, because his girlfriend is unknown. They don't say the police apprehended her, and she's safe, but some say there might have been harm. And, I mean, we don't know. The only information that, you know, I have some people that I can call and I have, and the information is limited right now because I understand there's an investigation going on. But the thing is, he went downtown, and at that door where the cops are about to close in, you know, that's when he took his life. And it was clear. The film was not edited. There wasn't a bunch of policemen around him that could have, you know, shot him or something. It didn't happen like that. He was running, and he just decided not to run. What he had done that day was so horrible, so atrocious, that took his life.
Well, another thing, why were all these people downtown at that time?
Dude,
you know, that's another thing.
Dude, have you been downtown Minneapolis during the day since the summer? I was like, I went down there. I had to put on a suit, take care of some business, and, you know, shop and whatever. And I'm walking in downtown Minneapolis, and it's like the 15 to 17-year-old's dream. They're down there hanging out. And there's nothing wrong. I'm not saying there's anything. When I was a kid, I hung out downtown. But, you know,
sure.
I had a mission. Go downtown, do something, go home. These kids hang out down there all day. And, you know, the shelters kick everybody out at 7. I'm not saying that everybody downtown Minneapolis was homeless, but there was a lot of folks I identified that might have been homeless. And the two guys I talked to downtown, they were pissed off because the shelter puts them out at 7 in the morning. So they come down to the IDS Crystal Court and kick it by the fountains and by the benches until someone asks them to leave. And,
well, that's what it threw me to how all those people were downtown.
Yeah,
but also, that same night, other places were also hit and looted. They hit the Walgreens on 43rd in Chicago again that night.
Yeah. And
they ransacked it, and I'm thinking Walgreens may not come back now. They've been hit at least 3-4 times.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, Mr. Scott, we have a call. Caller 1603 is your last four. What is your question or comment?
Hi, it's Paula. I just wanted
to
thank you. I work as an IT director at a private school over in St. Paul, and I just want to thank you for some of the insights on, you know, what our young people have been experiencing this summer. You know, it's an issue that we're really concerned about. But I also wanted to say I'm the IT director, and the technology challenges are substantial. You know, you mentioned the idea just of devices and Wi-Fi. That's just part of the issue. So I just wanted to thank you for that. It's going to be a challenging season. I think people need to start realizing just how much pressure we put on our schools and how important they are to the infrastructure. And I really empathize with teachers. They're the front line. So that's all I had to say.
Thanks for calling, Paula. Appreciate it.
But keep
okay.
up the good.
Thank you. Thank you very much. You know, one thing before I go on, we have another call. I'll get right to them. But one thing that I want to clear up, because as I watch that, well, let me get this call. Then we'll go into it, because you're going to get a kick out of this, Anthony. Caller, last four is 2192. You're live on Our Black News. What's your question or comment? Okay, we'll put you back in the queue. Yeah, someone calls in that number every week and they never say anything. They just sit there. And, I mean, that's cool. I have no problem.
2192, maybe 2192.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, okay. I got you. Anyway, see, you've been messing me up for weeks on that. I got something for you on that. It's very interesting that I watch, like I said, Anthony, I was like, my wife thought I was crazy. She goes, why you got all those iPads going like that? Turn them down. Okay. She wasn't complaining. I said, I have to watch this because this is like the most interesting piece of context on the chaos in the Black community that is so solvable that it's ridiculous. So I'm watching this. I watched the city of Minneapolis call its heavy hitters. I saw these people downtown that you would never see downtown in this kind of chaos. And I saw them asking people questions and acting like they were in charge. But I saw them 15 to 25-year-olds ignoring the hell out of them. Just because the city has adopted or paid some folks to participate in the Black problem or the Negro problem, doesn't mean they're going to be effective if they're not in touch with the youth. No one's talking to these kids. I mean, if you got a bunch of 15 to 18-year-olds in a room and say, what do you want? You'll get about 50, 60 different answers, if not 100 different answers. And all of them make sense. And all of them are founded on economic justice. You know, they want a job, but they haven't had a job. And if you ever dealt with a person that hasn't had a job, work is kind of a foreign term, because I learned the hard way. Anthony, you learned the hard way, because when I was little, I used to look at people driving Mercedes and Cadillacs and big trucks and go, wow, he must not have to do nothing. She must not have to do anything. Look at, they're driving, they're rich. They're driving those big cars. Then I found out for that man to keep that Mercedes, to keep that big house, to keep whatever he has, he's working 60 to 80 hours a week. And we have not instilled that work ethic in our Black youth. Part of that was because they took away the neighborhood youth program. Remember that?
Oh, I do. I remember going out to places like Pike Island out on Fort Snelling to just clean up the island. That was a job. I was a teenager.
And it was cool.
I've also been reading a book called The Warmth of Other Suns. And what that is the story of America's great migration, where Blacks left the South, the so oppressive down South, and there were jobs up here, there were things like the wars going on, they needed workers, and Blacks were able to come up here with a different different mindset. I believe that they came up here with a mindset of knowing that the South was tough and coming up here and having a chance to work and get jobs and get their own place and own property, even though they had redlining, even though they
Yeah.
They ran freeways through our community. They continued to be on our case all the way through this thing. But people came up with a different mindset. I mean, I think they stuck together better. It was just seemed to be a much more organized situation within themselves.
Yeah.
Because I know every place I lived in, my parents, we lived across the street from a school. Everywhere we lived was across the street from a school.
Mm-hmm.
So you saw what their priorities were, you know, for the kids and for the next generation coming up. And I just don't see the organization. I don't see they take our schools away. There's all kinds of apartment buildings that are supposed to be affordable. And I've never seen homelessness here in the Twin Cities like I see it now.
Yeah.
I've never seen people living in parks. You used to see a few people under the bridge. I mean, those things happen. I mean, you get down on your luck. I mean, I'm not putting anybody down.
Mm-hmm.
But I've never seen where it's been condoned. You can just live in the park now. You can just – Nicollet Park has been taken over. I mean, they've kind of left Powderhorn. And that's not the answer.
No.
There's not the answer. It's not putting people in the parks. I think someone even said – I don't know if it was you, Don – down around the University of Minnesota, around the river there, that there's an encampment there.
Yeah, that's, I saw that. I said that last week on the show, freaking out because – Not freaking out because I was upset. It was like, we have to do a better job for people that are down on their luck. You know, the cities, both cities are being very successful at trying to wipe out the middle class. And if we continue, both St. Paul and Minneapolis, like even in Minneapolis, I think St. Paul too, all the businesses that were destroyed down Lake Street and other places, the city still wants full property tax, which is heinous to begin with.
Yeah.
And what do we do to get those businesses jump started again? I mean, I don't care how much money they need. We need those businesses up and running. We need those kids working at the Taco Bell, the Burger King, the McDonald's, the Arthur Teacher's Listenship. They don't have Arthur Teacher's Listenship, but I worked there when I was a kid. On 31st and Lake, I worked there in the 70s. I'm allergic to fish, but they were hiring, and I took the job because they paid a lot of money back then. So we have some more calls. Again, you're listening to Our Black News on Blog Talk Radio. I'm Don Allen. I'm joined by special guest host Anthony Scott. Our number is 347-426-3904. Callers, I'm sorry for making you hold so long, so let's go right here. Last four is 4644. You're live on the air. What is your question or comment?
You know, Don and Ron,
hello.
How are you today?
Okay.
How are you guys?
We're fine. How are you, sir?
I'm going to hang with you just for a little bit. There's a multiplicity of things that's going on. You know, these children are not educated. They're not going to get no jobs. No jobs up to date. You can go on the National Society of Black Engineers. They got over 7,600 STEM field jobs that's being advertised. And these corporations go to them rather than having job fairs all over the country. They go to them in a central location to give them a convenience of being able to be exposed and present their resume and apply for what's in need. But African-American children in general, not all now, and from here on out, we're not talking about all, we're talking about in general, they're not prepared for this. Now, it may not be their fault. We know who the fault is. Faults start before they get to that point in their educational careers. And that's why there's so many foreigners that come here and land in these jobs. That's why Africans from the African continent come here. And they qualify things that Black America, Native Black Americans don't qualify for. And they're being snatched up. Another point. We all got into the point of heroizing criminals. And I don't know where they come from. Everyone that's been in the news, when you look, they're criminals. This lady, Breonna Taylor, they put out a summary based on surveillance of her residence, though she was staying, 2224 Elliott, with the people that she would it with, Jamarcus Glover, Curtis Palms, Adrian Walker. They put GPX tracking devices on vehicles. They got court orders to do it, the authorities did, and tracked them as far down as Biloxi, Mississippi. And although I can't remember the city that she was working out of. And this lady got killed on a police raid. It was after her boyfriend and her two, and she got shot. They say that her boyfriend shot at them, and I'm thinking that he probably used her as a shield, but I don't know that. I wasn't in the room. But all the drugs that they was involved in, you talking about surveillance that went on for months. It's on the internet. It's called the Taylor, Breonna Taylor summary. Then you look at George Floyd. You know, I hate to see that the man died, but the thing that he was involved in, breaking and entering into this woman's house, this woman is pregnant, putting a gun up against her belly at one point in life. So those things are just ridiculous. And the NBA, they boycotting with this last incident with this Blake fella who was involved in an incident at a place he wasn't supposed to be. Didn't he not have a court order, restraining order, not to show up at that location? And it was his mm-hmm. girlfriend, the children of his, the mother of his children, mm-hmm. that called the police. I guess they're going to start calling her restraining order Becky. Yeah.
Caller, let me pause you there for a minute because I want you to continue, but I need to ask you a question. And it's very important question. Also, I need to tell you there's a little bit of a delay on the Blog Talk radio line, so I'm sorry, I don't mean to talk over you, but it's the only way that I can get your attention.
I understand.
So, what you told me, caller, up to this point is based on facts from your research. So, if you're telling people this, a collective, via a carefully curated Facebook post or a Twitter
mm-hmm.
post, you're saying that this is going on. This is, as a black man or a black woman, you are going to get attacked.
You're daggone right they do.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Finish, please.
Well, you're right. They call you all kind of names. Even Castile up there in York State that the police mm-hmm. shot. The police walked up to the car. You can see the video. He gave him his documentation. Now, mm-hmm. Minnesota law says you do not have to tell a police officer that you're carrying a weapon.
Mm-hmm.
Read it. He didn't have to tell the police that. In Missouri, they used to put that information on your driver's license. Then they stopped. They issue a separate card because it brought about heightened awareness between the police officers. They don't know what you're going to do. And we have cases. You know, the case in Newark, New Jersey, where the police got fired, but this white policewoman pulled over this black car, a car with black mm-hmm. drivers, a passenger and driver. And she's there telling him this, that, and the other, and he refuses to do it. Then she sees a gun in the car. She tells him to put his hands on the steering wheel. He wouldn't do it. First, he rolls up the window. Then he lets it down. Then next thing you know, he takes off, and it's a police chase. He ends up getting killed. The driver did. But all mm-hmm. they had to do was comply. Just comply. What's wrong with people today that they don't comply with authority? This last case, this man, they tore his shirt trying to. People say they should have tackled him. Well, hell, they tore him, grabbed him by the shirt. He tore his shirt off of him. And he brought his kids, putting them in danger in the whole situation because he wasn't supposed to even be there. Then he have a weapon in the car.
Okay.
So why is it and like you say, Ron, people don't do their own research. They don't. I don't even think they know how to research.
I mean,
because you see,
emotion.
Yeah, they base it off emotion.
Mm-hmm.
And then they base it off some illogical logic. NBA want police reform. Well, duh. How in the heck you going to get police reform out of 18,000 police authorities in different states, different communities, and the state's constitution allow those communities to exist and operate however they see fit? You're not going to do it.
No.
20 states,
no.
Blacks make up only 10% of the population. And out of those 8, they make up 30% or more down in the southern states. So you got some states, you only got a handful of black. Matter of fact, when a black person see another black person in some of these states, it's like Lassie come home.
It's a holiday. Yeah. Yeah. So I guess what I want to ask is, and then we'll call her. There's another caller holding. I'll be right with you in a second here. Please don't hang up. But all these facts, you hear about all this stuff. Jamar Clark in Minneapolis, who was celebrated as the poster person for police brutality. And no, we're not justifying. I'm not justifying any black person being shot and killed, okay? But what this caller is shedding light on is that, you know, we went through 400 years of crap. And the police system, everyone's looking at the police, talking about defund the police. And actually the police, you have to go to their bosses, the mayor and the city council, who make the policy for the police. And I don't see anybody doing that. You know,
and you know what else, Ron? You know what else, Ron? The people are the real boss. They elect these folks.
That's exactly. Take your own power that's already there, that you've been trained that it was no power, and use it. You could change the whole dynamics of everything. And that's one of the messages. You know, I don't want, like I always say, I don't want people to think like me. I want you to think and use your brain. There's no reason that any black man anywhere should be shot and killed by the police. We know that. That's a gimme. Okay?
Unjustifiable.
Yeah. And, yeah, is it justifiable? You know, what is the history between George Floyd and Chauvin? There's a long history there. We don't even have that information. That information is in the ongoing court case. The history behind Jamar Clark and the officer that killed him. Go ahead.
But doesn't it seem that some of these officers in these police areas are just somewhat trigger happy now?
Oh.
But doesn't it seem like they're sort of for them to reach for guns and to pull guns out? I mean, it just seems like there's a fear, or there's something that seems to be going on with these police around where they're just seem to go quickly to lethal force.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I mean, people getting, you know, it's getting stopped.
I don't blame them for being. I don't blame them for being feared, because they've probably been shot at for no reason at all. See, a dog is going to be a dog. But when you start beating that dog and doing this, that, and the other, and you corner him, he's going to fight back viciously. So it's how people also respond and treat the authority.
Yeah, okay. I agree with that. Caller, hold on for a minute.
That stuff adds up.
I want to keep you in the queue here, but hold on for a second. Let me grab these other calls. Thank you. Caller, last four is 7527. You're live on Our Black News. What's your question or comment?
Hi, Don. This is Angela Janice Williams. I'm listening, and I'm kind of disturbed by the gentleman that you just put in the queue. He's referencing people as dogs too much. First he said Lassie come home. Now he's talking about if you put a dog in the corner. You know what I'm saying? Is that what he think our black youth are? He think they're dogs? Now, I don't want to get the wrong impression or anything about what he's saying, but I need him to be clear about that we are not dealing with dogs. We're dealing with young men and women who don't have no leadership, who don't have no guidance, and they're not stupid and uneducated. Our young people are brilliant. If he even takes 5 or 10 minutes to talk to them, I don't even think he has done that. He's talking about doing his research. Has he even done the research on just standing down there and talking to those young people? I used to live downtown.
And can I just interject something to you? And I've talked to this caller on several different occasions from a historical perspective, and I don't think that he's being negative as a black person toward black youth or anybody else black. But it's sometimes when you question and look deeper or critically, and I'm not speaking for him, I'm just saying that if you're looking at stuff and you want to find out, there's not one side of any story. You know, there's never,
right.
we're being fed by the mainstream media, you know, fear, hate, disconnection, all this stuff. And you know as well as I do that sometimes kids don't like to read, especially our black youth. Kids aren't interested in Baldwin, Langston Hughes, or anybody else. And so we have this gap, this knowledge gap, because all the knowledge are in those books. Or you could talk
right.
to community else. And we found out throughout the years that, you know, it used to be in the 60s and 70s, a kid would be afraid to walk amongst a group of men. A kid would be afraid to walk through a group of men. Now men are afraid
mm-hmm.
to walk with kids. You know?
But they have nothing to fear, though. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The gentleman, your friend, he has to come to the table. If he, yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just saying, I'm sorry about the delay. You know, I've had several different experiences, good experiences and not so great experiences, but I understand they're kids. And if they don't have the foundational knowledge, if I can't give it to them because they're not listening, they have to find it out the hard way. I'd rather share some experiences, share some life skills.
It easy for them.
Yeah, I had an older cousin that I relied on for that. I could see what he's going through, and he would say, Donnie, if you ever want to avoid this, don't do this. And I listened to him, and I avoided a whole lot of stuff, you know.
Right.
And I appreciate that. And our kids don't have the people in the classrooms even that understand how to do that. You can't, you
well,
know.
Well, first of all, they got a bunch of white teachers in the classroom. So why would they even, you know, yeah, you're supposed to listen to your teacher and do your homework. But other than that, why are they listening to white people? And then second of all, he talking about, you all said something about our leadership. Yeah, the black leadership in Minneapolis only concerned when the police is involved with something. I don't really see them protesting for education. I don't see them protesting for jobs for our youth. I don't see them protesting for anything or organizing. They're really not even organizing around all of this other stuff that's been going on. All I see is a bunch of marches. I haven't seen one meeting or invite or event on Facebook about a community, like a town hall or something virtual, about what type of solutions are we all going to, you know, what do we have for our community? And one thing I've always said about black leadership here is that everybody think they know everything. Everybody's got, I got the answer over here, I got the answer over here. And then, in my opinion, ain't nobody doing nothing. You know what I'm saying? Everybody, you know, they don't, one person, one group don't want the other group to get the money. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Because they not, you know, they feel like they this and that. But in my opinion, I don't see none of them doing what exactly what they're supposed to do. You see what I'm saying? I see a mother's love out there, boots on the ground, trying to reach the youth and everything. And then I had mentioned something about GVI, and I wasn't trying to insult, you know, my brother, Mr. Brown, Mr. Farone, Jason Brown. I wasn't trying to insult them. I was just saying that I don't see them out there. Now I see this Guns Down, Love Up initiative, but I only see that when some gun violence is happening. Now, why would you all have get all this money and y'all just sit in the corner and just wait for something to happen and then you go out and do a balloon release or a vigil or whatever? What is that doing? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, that
picnic.
Ms. Williams.
You see what I'm saying? That's what's disturbing to me. You know, and I don't know which way to go sometimes.
I agree 100% with everything you just said. We have been reactive for the last 25 years, and I watch these feeds. I saw people that I never thought I would see downtown Minneapolis. The folks like Dr. Nakima Levy Armstrong, Mr. Royce White, former NBA guy or current NBA,
mm-hmm.
I don't know, I don't watch. And I saw all these people in downtown Minneapolis that are in some way or some shape are funded by something, and I watch these kids ignore them. I mean, really.
Right.
Are you really going to listen to anybody telling you to, hey, y'all need to go home and calm down? What had happened was a bad rumor got started. And all of a sudden,
right.
That was enough off breaking the windows, running through Target. I still don't understand why Target is Target. But
right.
It happens. And excuse me. With that said, there are a lot of issues, a lot of challenges, and I agree. Leadership is non-existent. Stand by a minute here, Ms. Williams. Let me go to this next caller. Caller, your last four are 1466. You're live on the R Black News. What's your question or comment?
Good morning, Don. It's Rebecca, and I just got Royce in the car with me, so I was calling in. I was hoping not to have to go back to a subject that you've already stopped talking about because the conversation is going in a good place. But since we've gotten back to the other night, and I might even let Royce chime in since he just jumped in the car with me. But my intention in calling was that one of the things that that seemed problematic to me, as I was tuned in to live Facebook, that's how I found out about what was happening, how Royce and I found out about what was happening downtown the other day, was someone's live Facebook, and then we're making phone calls, we're getting phone calls. We did go down. And I think as it was happening, we're having people saying that there's rumor, and we're having our own community shame the community by saying, quit putting out bad information and the whatever. But here's what I saw for myself, okay, from where we were. So there was a nice gathering of people, a pretty nice-sized gathering of people there by the time we were there. I also had my teenage daughter with me. I certainly wouldn't have approached that gathering if there was utter chaos with her. So what I witnessed was a bunch of sharing of information. Sure, there was angst, and there were a lot of young people there. You know, some of them gathered together, some of them not. And there was an energy there of angst, yes, but there were more than that responsible people sharing good information. We were all pretty much had wrapped our heads around the idea that this man had taken his own life. And there were different information about what the homicide was earlier in the day. You know, that was kind of skeptical. You know, nobody was real solid on what actually happened earlier. But
true.
For the most part, the crowd had pretty much wrapped their head around the fact that this was not a police a police-involved shooting. The young people were really to themselves. And I want to mimic what you said earlier. The leadership did not have any control over the young people. But I think what's getting lost here is that we are living in a situation and we're talking about possibly defunding the police or not defunding the police and what should happen. But in the midst of somebody making a decision on what should happen, as a viable solution, the public does have to reach out to each other. Like, right, our cell phone videos, how we quickly talk with each other is saving our lives in a lot of situations. Sharing our own information and not relying on the mainstream media is what's best for us in situations where we cannot trust the police. And like you're alluding to, maybe we're not able to really trust leadership either. So I just wanted to say, you know, I'm going to hand the phone over to Roy because we were both present there, that we need to be careful about what we're saying about the public's reaction to yesterday or a couple days ago in terms of getting the right information. I think the police could have done better. The police could have done better to share facts.
Again, Ms. White, I agree with what you're saying. I mean, the premise is there to understand that. But we don't have in the Twin Cities that I've seen over the last 25, 30 years, there's not an information commitment. Okay? Earlier talked about, just quickly here before Roy talks, if he will, the test about using Wi-Fi in their. And if you know anything about what's going on, Comcast here, Xfinity, is a big company in Twin Cities. And I think both of these companies do run ads in our local two black main newspapers and some African papers here in town. So would it be beneficial or economically feasible for papers to do editorials and looking at that situation? No, not going to happen. So, again, the lack of information for us continues. Ms. White, was Roy about to say anything about the other night? Because I actually had a conversation with words being passed around regarding did an individual represent Nkema Levy Armstrong. And I was a little bit concerned about that because that was very interesting. But you can say what
else. Yeah, good morning, Don. Say. How you doing?
Hey, sir, how you doing? I'm doing great, man. Nice hearing from you. This is NBA great Royce White. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, no, I came in just on the tail end of the transition there and want to make sure that we're separating, you know, doing well with the information here to separate the crisis of leadership from myself. I'm only 90 days into this whole civil rights activist here locally thing. My history is going against the oligarchs on a national and international level, people like the NBA and their leadership and their tangential partners and their, you know, financiers. So that's my background. I've only been drawn into the local fray because of the George Floyd situation and the need to mobilize in that time. I will say, for me, I don't condone looting. I don't condone, you know, the violent riots. That's not my flavor. That's not the echelon that I would recommend or advocate for. I do understand the spirit of things too, right? And in the German philosophy. You know, they have their own set of words when it comes to the philosophical, and they talk about things like the zeitgeist and, you know, the spirit of the times. And I think that we have to be understanding that there is a spirit of the times beyond whatever the details are of information that are going on right there in the immediate, right? Yes, nobody was shot by the police in the immediate in the Nicollet area that day, but the spirit of the times is that whenever a body drops and it's a black man, there is a culture and a history of it being a situation where the police have mishandled it, okay? And that's what happens when trust is broken. The police create a trust between them and the community, and even more so than the police, the state. And, Don, you and I talked about this being a matter of the free people versus the state. And the renegotiation of the social contract and the tyranny that exists on a perpetual basis through history against the people. So when you see the people of that Nicollet Mall area rebel and go break into a Target, they're not breaking into the Target really because whether or not the man shot himself, that's not why they're doing it. They're doing it because they feel the overwhelming tyranny of the state come down on their lives over time, over generations even. And when you talk about mental health, like I have been able to do, and you come from that background of the psychological, you can speak to the perpetual spirit of the people, the perpetual mindset of the people. And the tyranny that existed over generations has now catalyzed in a young group of people that will do some things that seem like they're just off the charts. And, you know, another thing to be spoken about very bluntly and frankly is that Nicollet Mall area is off the chains every day when the weather is permitting. That Nicollet Mall area is off the chains every day. So a combination of circumstances, came together where there was a group of people there in that area that are already rowdy on a daily basis. You drive by there. I drove by there a day before that because my office is in the downtown area. And, you know, there are people out there shouting, yelling, talking real loud, dancing, doing whatever, that young people do. So it was the right set of circumstances. But regardless, I think there is a crisis of leadership in this city. But I think there's a crisis of leadership around the world. I think there's a crisis of leadership, especially throughout this country in Black America. And right now we even see, the first Black president encourage young Black men, young, wealthy, economic elite Black men to go back and play, to use a quote-unquote platform that has no shot at changing the opposition's mind. Has no shot at changing the system's mind unless they're willing to take the stand that's necessary. And you and I know that, right? And I'm not going to bash Barack Obama, but he's a centrist. And there's a serious threat of centrism in this country of people on both sides of all shades of all varieties that will preserve the status quo. And I am separate from that. I'm on the periphery. We know that. You could go check the records. You could go check the score and see the things I've said, see the things I've spoken in opposition against, and tell that I'm not for the status quo in any way. Okay? And so, like I'm saying, if we take a figure like Barack Obama and we delineate out to a Nkema and we say, well, the method and trajectory and path to Black elitism is by being a centrist, then it's no wonder there's a crisis of leadership, because a centrist approach will not solve what we're dealing with here. The platform that the NBA, and I use the NBA because it's such current news, and it is an important topic because, we do have a big portion of our country's Black elite engulfed in the sports world. I wish it wasn't that way, and maybe we move to a place in this country where that's not the scenario, but for right now, that is the way that the land is laying. And it is important that the NBA players and that the sports world take up the mantle and bear their cross in this situation. Because there's no way you can tell me Barack Obama or any of these other, Black elites, I call them the Black bourgeoisie, but, any of these other people, that LeBron James and those guys continuing to play preserves the platform. If you really believe in your heart as a Black man who has already reached the pinnacle of sports and already has an audience on social media, already has an audience with the global media, if you really believe that you need the system's platform in order to say something, have a message, and make a difference, then they've already won. Mm-hmm. And people like Nkema are just trying to jump into that fray. And, I did think it was weird that, Toussaint showed up and said, Nkema's coming down here with the video. She's seen the video. It was one of the more odd things I've seen in this whole, 90-day sprint. Now we're going to go out and march again tomorrow, because I do believe that the marching is not about awareness. The marching is an awareness campaign. Everybody is aware of what's going on in America for Black folks, the condition. Black folks are aware. White folks are aware. Everybody in between is aware. When you go out and you mobilize, you tilt the scales of justice in the direction of the people, because the state cannot bully thousands of people, or it's much harder to bully thousands of people. And that is a form of renegotiation. Renegotiation happens at the macro level, and it also happens at the micro level. Anytime you go and you occupy land and space that the state believes that they own. The state believes that they own us as individuals. Anytime you combat that by mobilizing and organizing, you are renegotiating the social contract. Now, what you decide to do when you mobilize is very important. A lot of these, speaking about Nkema and that crew, I went and tried to help and attend the march that they did. They decided to go down Nicollet Mall, where there are no streets, where there is no traffic, where there is no danger, where there is no threat. To me, that's the wrong form of mobilization. We'll go to the Federal Reserve, right? And so, it's just a different, there is a crisis of leadership, but there are good leaders that are emerging, and we are going to take back the scene and the civil rights, area, and we are going to continue to take back the country. So,
okay, I need to ask you a question. Now, that's all fine and good, but if I'm looking at or reading or working off the ideology of a Malcolm X, or someone like that who talked about we'd be marching 50 years later, at what time does that construct of boots on the ground marching move into a boardroom or a policymaking think tank?
We've already done that, Don. I mean, I told Kyrie Irving in my open letter to him that they should boycott, they should sit out, and what they should ask for is the NBA to provide, $15 to $20 million per organization to fund a black bank in each community, in each of their communities, right, and sort of reshape the economic infrastructure of black America, and that is where it lays. And for all these black elites who have all these ideas about where money should go and all of these things, it's not by accident that they haven't suggested banking. It's not a lack of it's not a lack of information. It's not a lack of education. It's not a lack of ambition. There's a reason why we stayed away from banking as an investment point for changing our community, right? And again, that's more of that centrist mentality. We're comfortable with white people controlling banking in this country, right, as a community and as individuals. So I think for us anyway, as the 10K Foundation, we have moved into a place where we are thinking about what else beyond the marching. But the point is that regardless of what things happen in the boardroom, the negotiation with the state for physical space is ongoing and perpetual. It doesn't need to be when a black man has been wrongfully killed. It needs to be every day, all day, the same way that they use the police and show a militaristic force on a daily basis. There's a reason why the cops patrol. There's a reason why the cops walk around the way they do. There's a reason they carry their gun out. All of it is a show of force on behalf of the state. Everything the state does to train its officers that patrol the communities is intended to show force. So that's what we have to also do in response, and it can't be the only thing. You're right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I appreciate your words today. Maybe we can have you back on next week for one-on-one or to one of my other shows, and I would greatly appreciate that conversation because there's a lot of pieces there we need to put together and hash out, and I appreciate your time this morning, sir.
Yeah, love you, Don, man. You know I'm a fan.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Okay, so that was NBA great Royce White, who has the 10K Foundation. He's here in the Twin Cities doing what he's doing. He's 90 days in, as he said, and he is trying to twist it in a way, not in a bad way, but in a way that's beneficial for the whole community, for everybody. And I know there are other factions out there in the black community that would like you to believe that all black people hate white people and all black people dislike or don't trust white people. And all black people think one way. And I'm here to tell you, I'm sure Anthony is that's not the case. Go ahead.
No, it's not the case. And that, you know, I want to kind of get back to one of the other callers that called in earlier, some of his comments about, comply. And I think sometimes we have to kind of get to, you know, self-preservation.
Yeah.
It's the first law of nature. It's the first thing my dad told me, self-preservation, first law of nature. And, a couple of years ago after the Philando murder, I had a program at the library, and I called in Commander Charles Adams. I'm going to use his name from the Minneapolis Police. And he came in with Ron Edwards. They came in together for my program. And so we asked, the whole program was about how do you stay safe in a police stop. And Commander Adams says, you know, I'm the commander of Minneapolis Police, and when I go to the store or where I go, I got a gun on me. He says, but I have been stopped, and I keep my hands on the wheel. I do what they ask me to do, and I drive away. And so listening, now he's commander of the police.
Mm-hmm.
Now he could have told that policeman, look, I'm your boss. But he didn't do any of it. You know, he's trying to tell us how to keep ourselves safe on these encounters. And I think, I don't think that should be lost in the message here. I mean, we have a broader thing. We're always going to have a beef with the white man until they come up with reparations or something that proves that they mean, that they really mean repent. Repent means just not only say you're sorry, but to, by your actions to show that you're going to make amends. So, I mean, there's two sides to this thing, but I think the encounters with the police, we really need to be cognizant of keeping ourselves safe. and getting out of that situation. And I think, like the earlier caller said, compliance. You know, you want me to just raise my hand, you want me to just sit there, fine. But on the other hand, I still say a lot of these officers these days are trigger happy.
They're trigger happy.
There's a lot more shooting. There's a lot more escalated violence than there needs to be in handling these situations. And I think that's a training issue.
So let me ask you this. If there is, if compliance is the flavor of the day for black men when they encounter police, what happens when that one bad apple takes it to the next level? We've seen, this is stuff that movies are made of, okay? We see that black man getting pulled over, can't see your license, yeah. And then unnecessarily step out of your car. Or unnecessarily you're going to jail because of this, this, or that. I mean, we've seen that. That history has repeated itself over and over and over and over again. So besides not trusting the police, there's a database, a historical database of these things happening, these people being killed. I understand. The police pull me over. I'm not moving. My hands are up on the steering wheel until they get there. I might have my two young boys in the car, you know, and I want to show them, you know, what should basically happen. But then again, wonder if I'm drug out of the car because I'm mislabeled by someone that just robbed the Super America or the Taco Bell or the liquor store, and I might look like this person simply because I'm black. Go documented data where that has happened repeatedly, thousands of times. So all these disparities, and I know my conservative black friends and white friends are going, well, you just got to work and obey the police. It's way beyond that. Okay, I'm not trying to knock you for your ideology. I don't want to knock you for mine. But if I'm dealing with a situation where I'm looking at the historical context and you're looking at the historical assumptions, the subduer and the subduee are not going to and the subdued are not going to speak the same language in any way, shape, or form. Baldwin told us that in 65 and before that. Okay, so you come to 2020. Again, housing, education, employment, home ownership, bank account, savings and checking, land ownership. I mean, we're virtually non-existent, and we're at a point where in Minnesota, and again, I'm keeping it here at home because I don't want to talk about Chicago, New York, or L.A. They all have their own problems. They all have their own set of poverty camps. In Minnesota, we are siloed. You have the elitists, you know, that might run nonprofit agencies. You have the black educators. On this side, you don't have the Urban League or the NAACP talking to the black educators because the black educators' game recognizes game, okay? You come at me with some BS, I'm going to say it's BS and tell you why, with evidence. Thank you very much. And so we're abandoned, and we need help with your kids, okay? Then you have the working class. We're all the working class, but you have the bus drivers, the engineers, the people that own small businesses. You have that group. Then you have these kids out there in full force. None of these silos are connecting to anything, okay? And again, you have the black youth not being addressed, not being talked to, not even being, you know, engaged in a meaningful way. I think it would be really great for the state of Minnesota, the city of St. Paul, and the city of Minneapolis to buy 1,000 copies of The Invisible Man and set you and I down there, Anthony, one night on Fifth and Hennepin and do some reading and hand out some books to the point where the kids get sick of hanging out on Fifth and Hennepin at the light rail stop, harassing people as they come by, you know? Go down there. Go down there and experience it. I'm not saying they're bad. They just don't have anything to do. The city of Minneapolis and the city of St. Paul has snatched. And you're crying about murders, people getting shot and robbed downtown. Hey, again, an idle mind is what? Somebody said. An idle, the devil's playground. Yep. And so everything that you're going to find in to get in crazy and do crazy, you're going to do. We were all kids. We know this. I know when I worked a 20 or 40-hour work week as a 14, 15, 16, 17, 18-year-old, then on the weekend, when I got that paycheck, I'm thinking, how can I keep this coming? Okay? This is good. I can go to the movies, the Skyway, the old Skyway Theater, downtown Minneapolis on Hennepin, watch Jaws or one of them movies, and go buy some popcorn, go get what we need, and go home. Okay? We weren't involved in this craziness. And when we had fun, we had kid fun. We didn't have the kind of fun where we'd go get a gun and shoot up some cars or shoot up the neighborhood, or we were fearful because someone might shoot at us, you know? And it was okay for myself and Greg, who lived down the street, to walk down Portland Avenue and 37 in Minneapolis and go up Portland to the corner store, go over to Mr. Crown or Mr. Rubin's store, buy a record. No one said anything. But you have a whole different kind of setup going on right now. And it's pushed in Minneapolis, especially by this young, green, no salt, no tread city council that is pandering to everything. You cannot defund the police, okay? Period. The police have 100 million something another. And so they said, we're going to take 1 point so-and-so million and put it over here. You're not defunding the police by taking a few million from them. It is still a part of the city charter. It's a part of the Constitution. You're going to have to figure out how to retrain police, how to retrain the community, or retool the community, give it resources to combat what's ever going on. Trust me, Mr. Scott,
yeah.
Trust me, if the city of Minneapolis and the city of St. Paul invested in our youth from 6th grade to 12th grade during the school year job, because right now is the perfect time for the city of St. Paul and the city of Minneapolis to step in and say, hey, we have these jobs starting up. They're going to start from 3 p.m. to 8 p.m. Monday through Friday, and Saturday from 9 p.m. to 3 p.m. Do you know that we have every kid we need in class during distance learning? Because they have to go to work at 3. They're going to make some money from 3 to 8. Right now, these kids are scuffling. They're working in the morning, the afternoon. They're not getting done with school. They're not doing any, you know, all their stuff they have to do to maintain their family. And some of their parents don't have jobs because of COVID-19. COVID-19 has been a curse, a plague. And to some people will always make money off disaster. And people are making money right now off what's happening with this COVID-19. But here in the Twin Cities, we're just sitting down and these politicians have their thumbs in their butts, basically. I said, get creative. It does not take that much to do so little to help so many. Okay? And it's funding. It's taxpayer money. I understand. But if they came half the way, the private sector would come in. The private sector has abandoned the black community, except for Target. But Target's always getting braided, so I don't know how long it's going to last. But you see, after the other night when a young man committed suicide and all the riots that went on, Target has the governor and the both cities trained well, because before you know it, the National Guard was down there. Target ain't having all their stores burnt down or looted or none of that anymore. Fortunately, that did happen. With that said, we're getting to the end of the program. I'd like to thank everyone for listening. You have any final words?
No, I just think things are such under siege here in the Twin Cities, and I think a lot of the rioting, the looting, and all this is a lot of opportunists. I don't even know if these people are neighborhood people. I don't.
Yeah, you're right.
Well,
we'd like to thank everybody for listening to Our Black News with myself, Mr. Allen, and Mr. Anthony Scott tuned in. I appreciate it. And this podcast is available on Blog Talk Radio as soon as we get done. And we're going to let James Brown take it away.